Good evening and welcome to Two Guys, Three Consoles podcast. My name is Jeremy J. Mostafala, and with me as always is my friend and co-host, Matt Leachman Leach.
Hey, how you doing, J. Monster?
Not bad. How about yourself?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Very good.
Good stuff. So this is our third episode.
It is, yeah.
We've had a bit of good feedback about the first two. I think people have been enjoying them, so it's good.
Yeah, I'm quite glad that people are enjoying the episodes. So I've got some feedback as well. So it's good that people listened to it and downloaded it. And yeah. hopefully it will continue.
Yeah. Right. So we're starting off with gaming news as usual.
Yeah, gaming news, yeah.
Okay. Do you want to go first or do you want me to?
I'll go first if you like. So I found a story about how successful Silent Hill 2 has been since it launched back in October. Apparently, as of last week, it sold over 2 million copies, which is pretty good.
This is the remake.
I never played the original Silent Hill 2. I played the first Silent Hill on PlayStation, but I didn't like it because it was fog. Most of the game was fog, which is part of the aesthetic. Obviously, the PS1 wasn't that powerful enough. So I only played about an hour or so of it. I borrowed it from a mate at work at the time. And then Silent Hill 2, I did buy the remake at the beginning of October, I think about a week after it came out, actually. I've only played about halfway through it, but I have been enjoying it. I just need to go back and finish it because it's a good horror game. I can't remember if it's the same people that did the Resident Evil games. I don't think it is. I'm thinking of The Evil Within and The Evil Within 2. They're the ones who did the original Resident Evil games on the PlayStation 1. This was done by a developer called Bloober Team. That's the name of the developer. They did the remake. I don't think it's a one-to-one remake, but it's pretty accurate.
No. I mean, Konami are weird with games these days. They sort of stopped for a very long time and were just sort of concentrating on pachinko.
Yes.
And it's only sort of more recently they've actually gone back to actually, you know, producing their own games. And so I think that sort of break they had, they've almost like dissolved most of their internal teams that they had, get other developers to make their IP for them.
Yeah, absolutely. They brought out the Metal Gear Solid collection, didn't they? Which apparently aren't supposed to be that good, although I think they've cleaned them up a bit now.
Right.
And they're bringing out the Metal Gear Solid Snake Eater Delta, which is a remake of the third game, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, hopefully they'll do some stuff with their other IPs as well, but we'll see. Yeah. So they seem to have to be press-ganged into doing stuff, don't they? But, yeah, so that was a bit of news that I thought was quite interesting, just because if it's selling well, then obviously people are enjoying it. Yeah, we'll go back and finish it, and if I do go back and finish it, we'll talk about it on the podcast. But it is a good version of the game, as far as I can tell. I haven't thought about platinum yet because I think it requires at least two playthroughs.
get through one first, and then see how you feel about it.
Yeah, exactly. So, about your news?
So mine sort of follows on a bit from last week about Ninja Gaiden 4 that's coming out. Is apparently a collaboration between Team Ninja, who made it originally, and Platinum Games.
Right.
So they're making it together, and it was suggested to them by Phil Spencer of Xbox Microsoft.
Is he a fan of the games?
I would guess so, yeah. I came across that it's apparently only happening because he suggested it work together and make it. So.
Well, that's success with the original 3D Ninja Gaiden on Xbox, didn't they, in Xbox 360? So I suppose Phil Spencer suggesting it is probably not a bad thing. You know, Platinum Games, they did the Bayonetta games, didn't they?
They did. They also did Nier Automata.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Platinum have done a bunch of things. Not all of them have been good. They did a Ninja Turtles game that I really wanted to be good that was a bit meh.
Yeah.
They've done quite a lot of stuff. I'm trying to think. Guy who's like one of the main guys for Platinum, I forget his name, he's Japanese fella, he's a bit funny on social media. He'll like, if anyone tweets at him in English, he automatically blocks them.
That's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Yeah. Is it Hideo Kamiya, something like that? I forget.
I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's left Platinum now and gone off to form another new studio.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I remember seeing an article, was it a year or two ago, of him leaving. There was like a YouTube video of him getting into his car and like leaving. If it's the same guy I'm thinking about, he's a bit eccentric, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely.
So that would be good to, if Platinum Games are making it, it should be a decent game.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Like, yeah.
I'm definitely interested, like we said last week, or last episode, that, you know, Ninja Gaiden games have always been challenging for sure. So hopefully this will be a good modern version of Ninja Gaiden. But
yeah.
And it's coming out, from announcing it to it coming out, they announced it last week, and it's just coming out in the autumn. So
yeah,
it's pretty quick.
Maybe it's been worked on for a little while already, or it's just a quick turnaround, who knows. But yeah, that was about all the news I had this week.
That's it for news, is it? Yeah, so that's the end of the news section, and I think it's on to what we've been playing, isn't it?
So again, sort of tying into what we were just talking about, I've been trying out some of the Ninja Gaiden 2 Black remake, because that was on Game Pass. And damn, that game's hard. I think I eventually got past the first level, and it tells you how long it takes you. It took me 55 minutes to do the first level, and yeah, it's not easy. I think it's one of those games that if you get good at it and get into like the flow, then I think it would be quite enjoyable.
But yeah,
it's not something I've managed to do so far, and the urge to button mash is high.
Yes.
I don't think it's the kind of game you're supposed to do that on. Like,
no.
The game still reminds me to block sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I think I remember on the original Xbox version of Ninja Gaiden that I had to learn at least two combos muscle memory to get through the game, because if you didn't learn at least two combos, you just couldn't make it through the levels.
Right.
It might be similar for this one. You have to you have to know at least two combos without even looking at the face button. You just do it. So you get so many enemies thrown at you. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I played that, got stomped on by the first boss first go, and then went back and did him on the second try. And I was like, oh, that's odd.
That happens sometimes in games, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, like, it's like that was super hard, like 2 minutes ago, and then I just did it.
Yeah, like a Dark Souls boss, or a Dark Souls 2, or Dark Souls 3, or even Bloodborne. You'd spend hours trying to defeat a boss, like literally 2 hours, and then you just turn it off. And you go back the next day, you beat him first time, you're like, why didn't I do that last time?
Yeah. So I got onto level 2 and progressed a little bit, and then it seemed to throw the first, like the boss from the first level, back at me again, but a bit harder. So I died a few times, got hacked off, turned it off.
Yeah.
So I might go back to it. I don't know. I haven't really got the thing just yet. If it gets its claws into me, I'll probably stick with it. But
yeah,
thus far, it hasn't done, so I don't know if it's going to. The only thing I've been playing this week is Retromania Wrestling, which is the spiritual successor to WrestleFest that I mentioned in one of the previous episodes. So it plays very similar to the 90s. Arcade game, pretty much an entirely different roster. It's not like sponsored by WWE or anything like that. So the only sort of wrestlers in it that I really recognize particularly were Legion of Doom, or aka the Road Warriors, with the red spikes on the shoulders.
Yeah, I remember that.
They're in it. But other than that, I don't remember an awful lot of the guys in it. You play some guy called Johnny Retro in the single player, and I've completed the single player twice so far. I've done it as a good guy or a face, and then tried to do it as a heel, which is the bad guy, and then got a different achievement for being a tweener, which is apparently where you pick a little bit of both. Like, you, if you're a tweener, you're an in-betweener. So I didn't manage to go 100% heel, so I didn't get the heel achievement.
Right.
And if you've played the original game, it pretty much builds on that with a couple of new mechanics thrown in. So if you've played the original WrestleFest, you could probably play Retromania as well.
Right.
And it's got some DLC coming, with Demolition coming in, who are another set of guys I know from my childhood who got face paint, and they were called sort of Road Warrior ripoffs before the road, you know, Legion and Doom came into WWF. So it kind of makes sense that they're going to be in it. Yeah. So I'll probably check out that DLC whenever that arrives. And it's got like a Royal Rumble mode, which is called a Retro Rumble. So I've done a bit of that as well. It's a good little game. It's not like a full price game or anything. It's like, I think it's about...
What platform are you playing this on?
On Xbox.
It is on Xbox, this one.
Yeah, but I think it's on basically everything. It's on PlayStation, and I think it's on the Switch as well, and is even a little bit cheaper on the Switch, which is
right to
change.
Like, so it is multi-platform.
Yes, it's on everything. It's made by RetroSoft, who are a little indie studio. So they've put it on everything, but instead of it being more expensive on Switch like things normally are, it's actually cheaper on Switch. But I have to admit, I went for the Xbox version because the achievements, there's of course no achievements on the Switch version.
Of course. I mean, it'd be interesting to see on Switch 2 if they introduce some kind of achievement trophy.
Well, yeah, but it'd be nice if they did, but they need to come up with a better name than accomplishments.
Yeah, they need to have a bit of a think about it. But they haven't done it for Switch. Maybe they'll do it for Switch 2.
No, I kind of mentioned before, from what I understand, Miyamoto's not a big fan of trophies or achievements, and so I think that's why they've not done it.
A lot of people aren't, you know.
So,
I mean, I used to use the achievements on Xbox 360 to track where I was in the game. Like, what was it? Crackdown on the 360. I was tracking the orbs that you had to collect,
right?
Using the trophies and all that lot. The achievements getting mixed up. And same with PlayStation. You know, when the trophies pop, it kind of, as you progress through the game, you know how far you've got.
Yeah.
But fair enough, it's not for everybody. And I guess at this point, you know, if they didn't introduce them for the original Switch, they probably won't give them on Switch 2, but they might do, you never know.
Yeah, who knows? You can never tell with Nintendo, you never know what they're going to do.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's right. Me, what have you been playing this week?
So I've mainly been playing a game called Space Marine 2,
mm-hmm.
which is Warhammer in the Warhammer 40K universe, yeah. Which I did play. I've only ever played one other Warhammer game,
mm-hmm.
and that was way back on the Amiga called Space Hulk, which was like a turn-based combat game. I didn't like it. I think it was back in like 93 or something like that. I didn't like it. I only played it for a few hours and I was like, no, this isn't for me. Mm-hmm. But this is a third-person shooter melee combat gameplay. I don't know much about 40K, Warhammer 40K. My brother knows a little bit more than me about it.
Mm.
And he played this game when it came out, and I've been asking him about, you know, what the things in the game mean, and he just sends me to the Wikipedia page because there's so much lore based around Warhammer. Because I first heard about Warhammer when I was at school.
Right.
And I think it started in like 1987. Mm. And I remember first hearing about it in like 88 or 89 when I was at school. One of the guys at school I'd like the figures, because it's Games Workshop that created Warhammer 40K.
Yeah.
There is actually a shop in Manchester, a Games Workshop shop, and they've got loads of Warhammer stuff in there. They've got like Lords of the Rings stuff as well in there.
Oh, cool.
Anyway, but so the actual game itself is it's quite good. It's very think of like Gears of War, but without any cover. You play as one of these Space Marines. It's actually an Ultramarine. There's the Space Marine Corps, and then there's just like a special unit called Ultramarines, which are actually genetically engineered humans. And you and your squad, well, it's like three of you. The other two are controlled by bots. It's a co-op game as well. People can join you, so you can have two real people join you in your campaign as well.
Mm-hmm.
There is an online multiplayer mode, which I haven't played, but it's mission structured. So you get given an objective. You have to go in, kill as many of these Tyranids, I think they're called. That's the enemy. That's the main enemy. So think of Starship Troopers, if you've ever seen that movie.
Yeah.
They're kind of like those, but a bit smaller. They're the kind of the main enemy. And you make your way through all these different mission objectives. There is a story, and the story's quite good as well.
Mm.
I'm not going to really spoil anything if people haven't played it. But it's quite a well-structured game so far. I think I'm about a third of the way through it.
Right.
And that's what it tells me on the mission completion anyway, about 33%.
Mm-hmm.
And you get various different weapons, and you can get different like melee weapons. Like you've got a combat knife, and you've got a chain sword, and you can get other weapons as you progress through the game. You can unlock weapons as you progress through the campaign. Apparently it's not a very long game, so I don't know, I might have completed it by the next time we record a podcast. But I'm quite enjoying it. It's like I say, third person action combat game, and the story's engaging so far, but I have to keep pausing it and like try and understand some of the things that are going on in the story, because it references the 40K stuff, and like I say, I'm not up on the lore. I'm like, I have to go and read a bit of lore. You don't have to do it, you could just ignore it, but I like to know what's going on in the story. But yeah, I've been enjoying that. I don't know if you'd enjoy it or not. It depends on which you like to shoot.
I did dabble with it a little bit because it was on Game Pass. But like you say, it's an awful, it's very Gears of War-esque, apart from not having the, like, you know, knee-high walls to...
Yeah, there's no cover. There's no cover system in this at all. I mean, you can hide behind, like, pillars and structures and stuff. There's no, you can't actually, there's no cover system per se, but you can kind of hide behind them.
I'm not really a massive Gears of War guy, so I played it for a bit, but after doing, like, maybe a mission or two, I was like, I don't think this is for me.
Yeah, and I really love Gears of War. The original... played the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. I played the spin-off one on 360. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
One that came out before Gears 4?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, there was one on 360. I can't remember the name of it, but I played Gears 4. I don't think I played Gears 5. I don't remember playing that one. I may have done. I can't remember or not. But they're not making any more Gears of War games, are they?
I think they're doing a prequel next.
Right.
Which has been announced, but I don't think it's a release date yet, because a good mate of mine has held off on buying Xbox yet, and then that got announced, and that's basically got him interested.
Right.
He's been PS5 and Switch only this generation so far. So whenever that comes out, I'm sure he'll jump in and buy his Xbox to play that, because by saying that, if you hold off long enough, maybe Microsoft will put it on the PlayStation these days.
But... Well, yeah, they seem to be, you know, everything's an Xbox, like we said. Yeah. Last episodes,
but I'm not sure how much that strategy is working for them. I saw something recently about how Xbox sales or Series X sales are not good, they continue to dwindle. So, whether this whole everything's an Xbox is like a goer for them or not, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see how it pans out. I mean, I heard about the, I think it's the Samsung TVs that have got the Xbox app built in,
yeah.
So you can literally just sign into Microsoft and stream your games to the TV, which is actually
Game Pass to TV.
Yeah, it's a cool idea. I like the idea of that. But then, do you remember those consoles that came out one year at EGX? OnLive?
OnLive, yeah.
I got a free console and I used it 3 times and then I sold it.
Right.
Because the streaming technology just wasn't there yet.
No.
Did you
get a decent amount for it? Do you remember?
Can't even remember. So long ago now. I don't even know how much I got for it. But because I got it for free, then it was all profit.
Yeah.
I think
I remember hearing about you dying a death, but never.
Yeah, I think I played Arkham Asylum, streamed it on the streaming box because I can already completed it on PS3.
Right.
But this was because it was a PC based streaming thing. It looked a lot better. But yeah, so that's Space Marine 2. Quite enjoyable game. Well, if I finish it for the next episode, I'll talk about it some more then.
Yeah, sort of watch this space and see how we get on with it for next week. Right, so that's it for what we've been playing. Next section is one that we introduced last week. I don't really have any more to add to Platinum Watch. I've still got my 6 and not had any more, but I think you've got a bit more to talk about.
Yeah, so I was playing Lego Horizon Adventures, which I mentioned episode, and I got the platinum for it.
So this is the one you were calling boring last episode.
Yeah, you're right, but see, you know, if it's an easy platinum, I'm gonna do it. So it was easy, quote unquote, but tedious, because the main story was really easy to get through, and then it's concentrating on getting the rest of the trophies. And the main trophy that I spent the last two and a half days doing was getting each character to level 20, which means you have to go through the levels over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, which I finished that yesterday evening. So yeah, that brings me to 151 platinums. And when the next one will be, probably not for the next episode, I don't think.
No.
I'm not planning on getting any more platinums anytime soon, but never say never.
Okay, well, it's a short section this week then.
Yep.
Next section we've got is Retro Corner.
Yeah.
Do you want me to go first or do you want to go first?
You go first on this one, yeah.
Okay, so I think on one of the episodes you talked about, like, the first game you ever replayed. And so Super Mario Brothers is kind of mine. I think I remember being in junior school and you had that day near the end of the year where basically you did nothing of... like usual school stuff. You got to watch TV and people got to bring things in, and a kid brought his NES in with him, never played one at that point. I think he had the same pack that I eventually ended up getting, the Duck Hunt Super Mario Brothers pack, and I played it on that day, and then went home and nagged my parents to get me one for Christmas until they did. I think, like, so if people ask, I'll tell them the NES was my first console. It's not 100% true, because I think my dad got hold of an Atari, is it 2600? It's got like a wooden sort of finish, or like an orange across the front. Is that 2600?
I think that was the 2600, or it might have even been the 1200. I don't know.
Little joysticks with one button.
Yeah, I think it was the Atari 1200, that one.
I remember
playing that back in the early to mid 80s.
Mm. It was very basic, and he got it from like a
2600. You're right, it was that one.
It was 2600, right? Okay, yeah. So he got it from like a car boot sale or somewhere like that, and came home with that in about 1987 when I was about six.
Yeah,
and the main thing I remember about it is that all the games were on one screen. I think one of the games we had was Mario Brothers, the original Mario Brothers, not Super Mario Brothers.
Hmm.
You know, where they took the Koopa start at the top and work their way down and
yeah.
All that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I can't remember what other games we had. I'm pretty sure we didn't have E.T. But yeah, I remember playing that a little bit when I was a very little kid, and then it didn't take very long until that was like consigned to the attic, never really seen again. So Super Mario Brothers was the main thing I played when I got my NES. I mean, Duck Hunt was good fun, and you could cheat if you put the zapper right up against the telly and don't play like you meant to. You can cheat to play that one, but I don't think there's that much legs to Duck Hunt, really. It's kind of a game you sort of play for like half an hour and then sort of sack it off until someone comes around and you're like, oh, have you seen this, and get them to try it. But for the most part, you wouldn't play it by yourself an awful lot. So original Super Mario Bros., I got proper into it. That was basically what started me off on gaming. And it got to the stage where I knew where all the warp zones were, like at level 2, level 4.
Yeah.
So by the end of it, I wasn't really playing the whole game through, you know, like you're supposed to, doing all the levels, or just go to the warp zones until you get to the very end to beat it. And then you can do it round again on New Game Plus when it's harder if you really want to.
Right, okay. So how old were you when you saw the NES?
About 9, I think.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You weren't that much older than me when I first started gaming, because I was 8 years old when I...
Yeah.
Yeah,
so it's probably like either late 89 or early 1990.
Right.
I can't remember which Christmas it was that they got me it for, but around that sort of time. Anyway, I was definitely less than 10, I think.
Right.
So, yeah.
So right on the cusp of the SNES coming out.
Well, SNES was 92 in the UK.
Was it? I thought it was 91.
No, so it was 90 in Japan,
yeah.
91 in the US. But as usual with us with Nintendo of Europe, especially back in the day, we got screwed.
Yeah.
It would usually be Europe gets weight along with Australia and the other power territories. So, yeah, no, we didn't get the Super Nintendo quite as early as
a lot of people. Right. I thought it was 91.
No.
Yeah,
in America it was, but not for us.
No, not for us.
So, yeah, I've sort of loved Nintendo sort of ever since then, Mario, all things like that. So that's what sort of started me off. What's your choice for Retro Corner this week?
So this is the original Elite that came out. Originally came out on the BBC Micro B, which I didn't play it on that because I didn't have a BBC. I had an Amstrad.
Right.
It was the first kind of space adventure game, controlling a starship I'd ever played. I think there was only one around at that time. There may have been one of them. And I was, you know, it was all wireframe graphics, and it wasn't actually on my Amstrad, it was on my next door neighbor's Amstrad, and he didn't have the color monitor, he had the green screen monitor on that.
Oh, wow.
So it was green screen
wireframe. You went in color.
Yeah, proper retro. And I remember, because it plays the Blue Danube music when you're trying to dock the starship into the space dock, and you have to turn the starship at the same rotation as the space dock to dock your ship into it.
Right.
It was so hard. I died so many times trying to do that. But it was the first taste of, you know, launching a starship, warp into a system, trading goods, like you could trade stuff. Because it was the first kind of freedom of choice, because you could be like just a trader in the game. You could be a pirate in the game, where you like raid other people's starships for cargo and then sell it. You could be like a bounty hunter. You could hunt down people. I'm pretty sure this was the original League. I'm sure you could do that. They were the three main ones you could do.
It's pretty cool for an 80s game.
Yeah, and I remember getting enough credits to get a docking computer. So when you reach the system with a space dock, you just press D for dock and it would automatically dock. You didn't have to go through that rigmarole. It was like amazing. And then I played that when I was about 10, I think. Yes, I would say in 84. I really enjoyed it. I was always around his house playing Elite. Put Elite on. Mm-hmm. And then I played the version that they brought out for the Amiga a few years later, which was filled in graphics. So it's color graphics. I enjoyed playing it on the Amiga as well, but you never forget that first time you play a game and you're wowed by it, and the wireframe graphics and everything. You know, looking back now, it's probably a real simple game, but I did enjoy playing it on the Amstrad. I did play the version that came out. It was exclusive to Xbox and PC when it first came out, Elite Dangerous, it was really hard to control the ship.
You
basically had to learn the controls of the ship, otherwise you weren't going anywhere.
I think I tried it and I couldn't even finish the tutorial.
No, it was so hard. I did manage to get through the tutorial, but it took me 20 hours. Just to do the tutorial, because it was so hard to control. It was so hard to control, they actually brought out a special controller for like thrusters for the ship. Like you literally, you know, a bit like the train controllers you use for PC games. Right. You know, you had one controller to thrust back and forward and another controller to like do your landing gear and stuff.
Right.
So it was ridiculously hard. I enjoy playing it, and I think they did release it on PS4 as well. I'm not sure if there's PS5 and Xbox Series X versions. I don't even know. But so Elite, that was a good one back in the day.
I never replayed it. No. I'm pretty sure there is a NES port.
It came out on NES.
Yeah.
Wow. I did not know that.
But I have no idea how it plays.
Imagine playing it with the NES controller. You've only got two buttons.
Two buttons, yeah.
And the D-pad, and that's it. I can't imagine how it would play.
No, it must be.
I'll have to look that up after we finish recording and see what it's like on the NES. Wow. Mm. I did not know there was a NES version. That's crazy. Yeah. So that's my retro corner for this week.
Okay. So this week's main subject is the first console that we ever bought with our own money.
Yeah.
So I'll let you go first with this one.
So the first console I ever bought with my own money was the Nintendo Super Nintendo Entertainment System, the SNES.
Nice.
That was the first console that I bought. I went to my mate's house and he had one. I can't remember if he bought it or his dad bought it for him. This was in 93, which had the Super Mario All-Stars on it, you know, the collection.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
He was playing that, and I'm like, what is this? I'm like, I mean, obviously, played Mario before, but I'd never played NES Mario, and I'd never seen SNES Mario. And I'm like, I'm quite enjoying playing these games. So I had no money at the time, and I went and bought my own version. I bought the Super Mario All Stars packing. I think I bought Super Mario Kart not long after I got the SNES, and they were my two main games. And I remember playing Super Star Wars on it as well. Now
it's getting so hard.
I don't know if I can't remember if I bought that if I borrowed it. I think I borrowed it off somebody. But that game's stupid hard.
All of this is a trilogy. All three films have got a Super Nintendo version. So there's Super Empire Strikes Back and Super Return of the Jedi as well.
And
they're all stupidly difficult.
Why were they so hard?
I don't know. I think, was it JVC that made them?
I think so, yeah.
I think Return of the Jedi, weirdly, was the easiest of the three, but I think it's still stupidly difficult.
Yeah. And
on Super Star Wars, I could get to, there was the Jawas level.
Yeah.
You go inside
On the Sandcrawler.
Yeah, you go inside the Sandcrawler.
Yeah.
And there was this big monster thing at the boss at the end of that level. I couldn't beat him.
I can't remember now if I beat the game or not. I remember getting to the Death Star.
You did?
I did make it all the way to the Death Star.
Mm.
Can't remember if I finished it. I think I did. But after my experience with that, I'm like, I'm not playing these games.
No,
it's too damn hard.
Of the time where I think if you walk too far left or right, the enemies you've just killed all just instantly respawn.
Yeah.
And it's just like a bit of an assault. It's just relentless from what
crazy,
I remember.
Isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I really liked the SNES. I liked the controller. I think it was well designed. The actual console itself looked good. You know, the Nintendo did a real good job of designing that console.
For us, I think the American one is a doorstop. The
American one looks like it's like made out of paper, like a folded paper.
It's awful, isn't it?
I don't like it at all.
No.
I'm glad we didn't get that one over here.
Ours is based on the Super Famicom Japanese design.
Yeah, I wouldn't have bought it if that had been the case. I would have looked at it and went, no, I don't want that. But the European one was, I really liked it. You know, I played quite a few games on it over the years that I had it. I got it in 93. I played, Super Mario Kart All-Stars, Super Star Wars.
Do you have Super Mario World?
Super Mario World, I didn't play on it. Star Wing, you know, with Fox McCloud. I played that, really enjoyed that. Mortal Kombat 2. We played, we used to have tournaments at university playing it in my room in the dorm.
Nice. What about Street Fighter?
Street Fighter, I didn't have on the SNES. I had it on the Amiga, Street Fighter 2.
Okay.
Didn't have it on the SNES. And then by this time, I think it was 95, and PlayStation was either out or it was just going to come out. I still had my SNES because I played Donkey Kong Country 1, 2 on it.
Yeah.
And then I think I played... That's the only games I can remember off the top of my head. And then by that time, I was moving on to getting a PC, I think it was.
Right.
And then I got a N64 after that.
Yeah.
Because that's when Ocarina of Time came out, and that's when I went and bought the console and Ocarina of Time, but I digress. So yeah, SNES was my first console that I bought with my own money, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. I can't remember what I did with it. Did I give it away? Did I sell it? I can't remember. I either sold it or I gave it to somebody.
Right.
And they carried on using it, so it got more life out of it than the 3 or 4 years that I had it for.
So Ocarina of Time was the start of 98.
Yeah.
Because again, I think wasn't the UK version delayed, and I think it was supposed to come out in the December of 97, but
that's right.
I remember it didn't come out until January 98, I think.
That's right. I went down to the HMV store in Oxford Street in London and bought the cartridge and the console at the same time.
Right, nice.
Spent quite a bit of money. I remember Ocarina of Time being 60 quid. And I was like, it's a lot of money, but I'm going to enjoy the hell out of it. And I did. Yeah. Oh, that was it. My favorite game on the SNES, Zelda Link to the Past.
Yeah.
That was my favorite game I played on the SNES.
That's a good one.
But I played that when, instead of doing university work, I'll be playing that game. Because it's more entertaining than trying to...
Your dissertation and stuff, yeah.
Study, you know, integration and differentiation and, you know, the theory of 3D magnetic fields. Oh my God, I can't believe I did that stuff. Don't ask me anything about it now. I ain't got a clue. I've forgotten all of it.
Right, well, I've got a little story about mine.
Mm-hmm.
So mine is cast your mind back to 1997 and Nintendo releasing the N64 on, I think it was the 1st of March that year in the UK. And it was 250 quid.
Is that old? And
I mean, you say is that old? I think it's a lot of money.
I know, now is that old? But then I suppose it was a lot.
Yeah.
I thought, wow, okay.
I was 16 and been wanting it for a while, so started nagging the parents. Would they get me it for either Christmas or birthday? And they were very frank and upfront, and were like, "We can't afford it. You're gonna have to make your own money to get this one."
Well, that was your challenge that you set yourself.
Yeah. So I got a part-time job in a sports shop, trainers and trackies and such like, that paid me £2.15 an hour. And so I worked all summer to get enough money together to get my N64. And then after I finally got it, about 3 months after I got it, because the N64 wasn't doing very well in this country compared to PlayStation, they slashed the price by 100 quid to 150 quid.
Bloody hell.
And I was like, yeah, I'm going to laugh. That was like 50 hours of my life that you just...
Yeah, but you were working towards it. Don't forget, Jeremy.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You had a goal in mind and you were going to retain it no matter what.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't the best job I've ever had. They wouldn't let me out the front in the shop. So they would stick me in the back. And it was when Adidas Poppers were the thing. and there'd be a delivery where there's supposed to be like, you know, 50 or 100 pairs of these poppers in this big box. I'd have to count them all. I'd count them. It's like, there's only 99 pairs. Go and tell the boss, there's only 99. He's like, go and count them again. Go and count them again.
It sounds almost like slave labor.
Yeah, it wasn't great. This is what I did all summer, was like count stock and stuff like that. But like I say, I was only 16 and making a minuscule amount of money per hour. So I got it in the end, but I remember all the hoo-ha when Nintendo cut the price of the 3DS sometime after launch, and then gave everyone who bought it at the original price the, what was it called? The Ambassador Program, where you got like 100 quid's worth of software to say sorry about the fact you paid at the higher price, you know, that made up for it. But none of that on the N64. It's like, you paid 100 quid more for the original price. Do you have more for you? That was that. So yeah, that's
you ended up paying the full 250.
Yeah, I paid the full 250, and then 3 months after I paid that, Nintendo cut the price by 100 quid. So I remember I was fuming at the time.
I would have been fuming as well, especially if you'd worked such a crappy job to get it.
Yeah,
but you know, you got it. And what was the first game you played on it?
I think it was Mario 64.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you get all the
120 stars?
Yeah,
I did.
Wow, well done. See, if there's ever a trophy or an achievement for that, that should be one on your list.
Yeah, that's true. It took me a long time to get them all, and I remember that when you do, it lets you up onto the roof of the castle, and Yoshi gives you 100 lives and then disappears off.
Right.
But you can't ride Yoshi like you could do in Mario World or any of them. He just literally turns up, gives you 100 lives, and then disappears again.
Was that the version, or am I misremembering, where when you finished it, you can replay the whole game again as Luigi?
You're misremembering. The N64 original, they literally give you the 100 lives, and then that's it. So right. I didn't have anything to do. That's the thing. They give you 100 lives, but nothing to do with them.
Right. Because you already completed the entire game.
The one you're thinking of, I think it was the DS version.
Right.
Where you could play as like a few different characters, and it had that weird little thumb thing that you could use on the touchscreen. You attach it to your DS on the back.
That's right, I remember that, yeah. Yeah, it was like an additional thumbstick that you could use.
Yeah.
I knew there was a version where you could play the entire game as Luigi if you wanted to.
Yeah, I think there's a few different characters in that one. There's Mario 64 DS, you could play as Yoshi, maybe as Wario, something like that. But I didn't particularly play that one because, bashed the hell out of the N64.
We'd already bashed the hell out of the N64.
Yeah, I didn't really need to play the DS version.
Did you play Ocarina of Time on the N64?
I did.
Did you?
It took me like.
Did you complete it?
It took me 7 months, but yeah, I did.
And what was the worst temple in it?
Water Temple.
Yeah, everyone says Water Temple.
So weirdly, when they have like redone Ocarina for like 3DS and stuff, they've actually managed to make the Water Temple slightly less awful.
Right.
They've given it some like quality of life things and stuff like that, so it's not quite as terrible as it was first time around, but in the N64 original it's pretty bad.
I may replay Ocarina of Time because I have not played a version of it since the original N64 version.
I didn't
play the DS version.
The 3DS remake, isn't there?
Yeah, the 3DS remake, which I haven't played.
I think I've got it somewhere if you want to borrow it.
Yeah,
if your 3DS still works.
I've got the 2DS, so I don't have the 3DS anymore, but it might still work.
The problem with going back to 3DS games, all the screens are 240p.
All right, so the resolution is crap.
Yeah.
I may play the version that's on the Switch, which is probably the N64 version, emulated version. That's a game. That's a game that's kind of crying out to be remade, isn't it?
Well, I was going to mention this. So there's a rumor of a remaster or remade Zelda game coming to Switch 2, but they've not said what it is yet. So a lot of people are putting two and two together and saying it's going to be another remake of Ocarina for the Switch 2.
I'll play the hell out of that if they did it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got 150 hours into Tears of the Kingdom, so, you know, I'm quite happy to put hours into Ocarina of Time. Maybe if they redid Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask together as a double pack, that would be awesome.
That would be cool.
Because I didn't play Majora's Mask. My brother did. I never played Majora's Mask.
I got to the last boss, and again, sort of spoilers for Majora's Mask, which is like 20 odd years old by now. But so basically, if you get every mask in Majora's Mask, because you play Majora's Mask as Kid Link, you know, like you do in the first half of Ocarina.
Yeah.
And if you get every mask, you then, when you get to the end of the game, you can get the Fierce Deity Mask, I think it's called.
Right.
And it, like, it then grows you back into the adult Link that you are at the end of Ocarina, and it makes the last boss apparently a lot easier.
Okay.
I didn't get every mask.
Yeah.
But I was on the last boss as Kid Link and Condemn.
Right. I think what put me off of Majora's Mask was when my brother was describing it to me when he was playing it at the time, was the day and night cycle, or you had to do it by a certain amount of days, and then
you basically had 3 days until the moon hit Tamina and killed everyone, and I think one day was 20 minutes, so you basically had an hour to do every dungeon that you needed to do in the game. And I think there was an ocarina in it again. The ocarina was still a thing, and there was like a song or something to like either slow down time or wind it back. But I think if you use that song within a dungeon, it stuck you back on the beginning of the dungeon.
Oh, God, no. This sounds like Dark Souls platforming to me.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily suggest to go back to it now. The only thing I want to mention about N64 before we potentially move on is that I was big on, like you say, Mario Kart 64 I loved. I've got mates who are massively much bigger on Diddy Kong Racing, which I never liked quite as much. But to be fair to Diddy Kong Racing, it did have like a story mode, which is something that Mario Kart doesn't do.
Yeah.
And it also had Conker as one of the characters you could play as, who's later on going to turn up in Kong's Bad Fur Day, was supposed to be in a cutesy, normal sort of platformer before they scrapped that throughout for Kong's Bad Fur Day. And it also, Diddy, I don't know if you ever played it, had boats, hovercraft, planes. Like, it wasn't just...
I remember reading about Diddy Kong Racing and that it was a really good alternative to Mario Kart, but I never played it.
Right. It's rare that made it. And I think there has been a sort of sequel that was either on the DS or 3DS, but never played that one.
No.
But yeah, I thought better get the mention of Diddy Kong Racing in. It was never my... I was always massively on the Mario Kart side, but
yeah,
the friends I have got who are into Diddy Kong Racing, and they're like, no, Diddy Kong is the way. They much prefer Diddy Kong Racing.
Yeah. I think I did have a copy of Mario Kart 64, but by that time I'd already graduated from university and I was working full time. It was just me playing it on my own, which wasn't as much fun as playing it with other people. So I think I only ended up playing it a few times, and then, well, trading in games that time wasn't a thing. So when I sold the console, I sold the game with it.
Yeah. So we played loads of Mario Kart 64 4-player because it had 4-player battle mode. And that was really good.
Does that mean you had to have 4 N64 controllers?
Yeah.
How did you afford those? Those N64 controllers, you look at them now, like, how did we use them?
Yeah, I've got one for the Switch, a wireless one. And
wireless N64 controller? That must be a third-party controller.
No, it's official Nintendo. You get it. You have to be an NSO member.
They made a wireless N64 controller.
For the Switch. Yeah. And if you're going to play...
How does it feel when you're using it?
It feels all right, yeah.
Okay.
If you're going to play GoldenEye on NSO, that's probably the way to play it. Because there's this whole thing about how Nintendo, you know, because GoldenEye obviously is rare and Microsoft own rare these days.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much truth this is, but allegedly Nintendo said to Microsoft, you can have GoldenEye on your machine, but we want the online exclusive on our version. So the Switch version has got online play, but it's also only got the original controls. If you have to remember, this is before dual stick. So you've got your one stick on your N64. I'm gesturing like the listeners can see me. you've got your one stick that you use your left hand, and then you've got your C buttons on the right, with your right hand that you use. So the Xbox version has got 4K and modern controls if you want it, but it's only got local multiplayer, no online devices.
How popular is the online version of GoldenEye N64 on Switch, though?
I don't know. I haven't tried it.
I can't imagine there's a huge amount of modern games.
No, but also I'm thinking, knowing what Nintendo are like, trying to protect little Jimmy, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a you can only play with people on your friends list thing rather than no randoms.
Please, on Switch 2, get rid of these ridiculous friend codes.
Yeah.
Stop, Nintendo. Fucking friend codes. They did it on DS. They did it on Wii, Wii U, 3DS, Switch. Yeah. It's like, stop already. We don't need a friend fucking code. Just make it a game attack. Like, everybody. Yeah.
So, like, apparently the Switch 2 might have built-in party chat on the machine. And so, basically, it's kind of funny that a lot of the things that Nintendo happened to bring in with Switch 2 are what Microsoft had with the 360.
Right.
Like, two generations ago.
Yeah, more than, isn't it? So, yeah, three generations ago? Don't know. Lost count. But you're right. I mean, come on, Nintendo. Sort your shit out. we love you, but you're so stupid.
Yes, they're just very behind with certain things. Like, you can't even send people messages.
I know. You have to use the stupid phone app.
Oh, that's a nightmare, though. I tried using that when they first released it, and if your phone locked itself, then it disconnected you.
Brilliant. Oh, God, Nintendo, what are you like? Right, are we ready for our next section?
Yeah.
Which is genres that have died off, mainly.
Yeah.
This week we come up with music games, so things like Rock Band, Guitar Hero, those kinds of games, plastic instrument games, some people call
them. Yeah.
I never played these games, you know.
I was going to say, what's your take on this?
I never played these games. I saw people playing them. I did not own any of the plastic instruments, did not own a copy of Guitar Hero or plastic guitar or anything like that. I just, at the time, it's just not something that I was interested in doing. But I know a lot of people really enjoyed playing Guitar Hero, especially.
Yeah.
Rock Band as well. I mean, there was a Queen version of Rock Band, I think.
There's a few. There's Rock Band Beatles.
Yeah, there was Beatles one as well. The Queen one I thought about, and then I thought, nah.
No.
And I think Rock Band 4 is still going, isn't it?
Yeah, we'll come on to that in just a moment. So I've got a little bit to cover on this. So the first music game I sort of became aware of was on the PS2 that my flatmate at the time had. I think it was called Frequency.
Yeah, Frequency, yeah.
And you played it with a pad, but it was a harmonics game pre-Guitar Hero.
Yeah, yeah. I remember it coming out. I remember reading about it or looking at GameSpot at the time, and Frequency was a thing.
So I played a bit in his room. I was never particularly good at it, but I know a bit about the sort of history. So the original Guitar Hero and Guitar Hero 2 were done as a collaboration between Red Octane, who are like a third-party controller manufacturer, and Harmonix.
Right.
And so Harmonix made games for Guitar Hero 1 and 2, and then Red Octane made the guitar controllers that you play the games with.
Yeah.
And then Activision came along and paid $100 million for the Guitar Hero I license, and also that meant that they owned Red Octane as well.
Right.
And around the same sort of time, Harmonix signed with MTV Games.
Yep.
So they, at that point, went in different directions, where Harmonix, who were the original makers of Guitar Hero, weren't making the games anymore. They made the first two.
Yep.
And then went off to make Rock Band with MTV Games.
Yep.
And then after Activision bought the Guitar Hero license, from Guitar Hero 3 onwards, they got Neversoft to make them, who, of course, are the Tony Hawk's developers.
Yeah.
So I think Guitar Hero, like I had a mate, again, a different mate, I had a Guitar Hero 1 or 2, and I played a little bit of it round at his. I remember thinking that the original guitar for the PS2 was really small, it was teeny tiny.
Yeah, small.
And then the first Guitar Hero I owned myself was Guitar Hero 3 for the Wii.
Right.
And you had to plug the Wiimote into the guitar controller itself.
Right.
To make it work. It had a slot on the guitar controller that you plugged the Wiimote in, and then it ran off the Wiimote's batteries.
That's an interesting way of doing it, isn't it?
Yeah. So I played that, but I remember being a bit frustrated with it, because the whole thing with Guitar Hero and Rock Band games is you really want to get downloadable content for the music that you like.
Yes.
They release music by a lot of different artists, and the idea is you make it your own sort of experience, depending on your sort of preferences for music.
Yeah.
And I think there was real issues with downloading the songs for DLC on the Wii, because the Wii's got like 500 meg of flash storage.
Nintendo failing online services. What a shock.
Yeah. No hard drive, of course. So it didn't take very long at all until you could fill up the Wii's memory by downloading like, what, I don't know, 6 songs or something. So when I got an Xbox 360, I started getting Rock Band on that instead.
Yep.
And I remember I got Rock Band 1, 2, and 3 on the 360. I also remember that Harmonix had a better idea of making a platform. So any songs that you downloaded for Rock Band, didn't matter which version of the game you downloaded the songs through, would still work. And that's still the same to this day. So the DLC songs I downloaded for Rock Band 1 still work on Rock Band 4 that I've got on the Xbox Series X.
Oh, right.
Whereas Guitar Hero, Activision didn't really have like a big plan in place in the same sort of way. So from what I understand, the Guitar Hero DLC songs were tied to the particular version of Guitar Hero that you bought them through.
Yeah.
And then you had to constantly swap out the discs and remember which version, like Guitar Hero 4 or... I think
Guitar Hero went up to version 5, didn't it?
I lost track of it with Guitar Hero.
Because that was the last version of Guitar Hero. I'm not sure about that, but I'm fairly sure Guitar Hero 5 was the last version of Guitar Hero.
I do know that at one point they released 5 Guitar Hero songs in 1 year.
Wow.
So 5 Guitar Hero games in 1 year. There's like Guitar Hero Aerosmith.
Yeah.
And Metallica.
I forgot about the band version of Guitar Hero. Yeah. Maybe Guitar Hero 5 wasn't the last version of actual Guitar Hero.
But,
so on the Series X, what controller are you using for Rock Band?
So I've got a old Guitar Hero controller that works. You get like a little adapter thing that you plug into your Xbox via USB, and then it...
So they didn't make any new plastic instruments for Rock Band 4 then? For the Series X?
Possibly they did, but if they did, I didn't buy them. I remember... I'm that weird person who I didn't like the Rock Band instruments as much as the Guitar Hero ones, because I started playing on the Guitar Hero ones. Even though the Rock Band ones probably look a little bit more realistic than the Guitar Hero ones, I like the feel better of the Guitar Hero instruments.
Because I remember the Rock Band game having a guitar and a drum kit.
Yeah.
But I can't remember any other instruments.
Like 2 guitars, drum kits, microphones, if you want to do the whole karaoke type thing and sing.
Right.
I think I've still got a Rock Band drum kit.
I wonder if it works.
I haven't tried it for a while. It's a bit tricky because I live above a cafe, and you obviously can't play it.
I don't know. I think you could provide live entertainment for the patrons. I think you should suggest that to the cafe. But look, you know, we're living above your cafe. You give us cakes and we'll provide music.
I don't think it would go very well. But the cafe opens 7 days a week now. So I used to play sort of Rock Band on Sundays if it was my weekend off, but I can't even do that now. So you basically just have to play in the evening if you want to play it. And also it takes up a lot of space as well. You have to like move the sofas back to give yourself enough space and all that kind of malarkey.
Of course.
Yeah, it takes quite a lot of hassle to put together. But if you do want to play it, I'll try and dig out the guitars next time you come round, make sure I've got batteries for them, things like that.
Yeah.
We'll have a quick go.
I remember a version, I think it was Guitar Hero, coming out on the DS.
Yeah.
Guitar Hero DS.
Yeah, there was a DS.
I have no idea how that works. Like, how would you do that? I suppose you have to tap the touchscreen.
Yeah, it's the touchscreen with the stylus-y thing. That year that there was 5 Guitar Hero games in 1 year, one of them, I say Guitar Hero games, one of them at least was DJ Hero.
DJ Hero, yes.
I never played that one.
No, I remember that one coming out. I think that was their try, let's try it and see kind of game with
So you got the little Dex controller. Rock Band 4, from what I understand, is still going. I think there was a DLC campaign released for it not long ago. I don't think I got the DLC or that particular campaign. I haven't got that one. But from time to time, I do sort of try and boot it up and have a little play. I think the last time I played, I just sang.
Yeah.
Like karaoke style. But like I say, I've got quite a lot of songs by this point. I dread to think how much. I think a few credit cards got not quite maxed, but massively overused with the DLC songs.
Money well spent.
Yeah. Because they did, like, certain bands' albums, they released, like, the whole album. So I think I've got, like, Nevermind by Nirvana, I've got the whole album. I've got Doolittle by the Pixies, whole album. 10 by Pearl Jam, I think I've got the whole album of that as well. Mm-hmm. And I've got quite a few Weezer songs. I'm not sure if they released full albums of Weezer, but they did like packs where you'd get like 4 or 5 songs in a pack. I was doing that. So yeah, I've got quite a lot of songs at this point. Yeah.
It sounds like you're well into it. Like I said,
I was.
I never purchased a version of it. I never played musical instruments or anything like that.
I think I had Lego Rock Band as well at one point.
Mm-hmm. I remember thinking at the time, I don't know why I thought this, because I just every time I heard about a new Rock Band game or guitar, I just kind of irritated me. I'm like, I was a bit, I think I was a little bit snobby about it at the time. I'm like, these aren't real games. These are stupid. Why would you stand there playing a plastic guitar? Stupid. But then, you know, I'm a bit wiser these days.
Yeah.
You know, a bit more mellowed out. You know, I could see the appeal of it for definite, but at the time I was like, I just dismissed it. I think that's what it was. I just dismissed them as not real game.
So I think I started off playing on normal and went my way up to hard, but I've got at least one friend who is that guy playing Guitar Hero. And his, like, I remember we had a party one Christmas on Christmas night where we were playing them, and his party trick was we stuck him on Through the Fires and Flames, which is the Dragon Force song. Is arguably the hardest song on Guitar Hero 3, and he could do it on expert. Wow. And it's crazy to watch. Like,
That's impressive. Yeah.
I couldn't even do it on normal, that song. I think I had to play it on easy, and I could just about manage it on easy. But watching him do it on expert was a sight to behold.
I've seen videos of people doing stuff on expert in Guitar Hero and Rock Band, and it's mad. It reminds me of that Beat Saber game. I know it's not kind of the same kind of game, Beat Saber on expert is like, it looks like it's crazy. I couldn't do it. I don't know how people do it.
It's a VR game, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not something I'd ever play, but, you know,
I'm
impressed at people who can do that, especially in VR, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not a VR person. It makes me feel nauseous. So.
Yeah, I've only ever tried it once and it made me feel sick, so not something I'm into.
Apparently it's a common thing among people that wear glasses, from what I've heard.
Yeah, it's because the screens are right in front of your eyes, you know. It's just, you know, I think the VR 2 on the PlayStation is supposed to be quite good, but just not something I'm interested in at the moment.
Well, Sony have done their typical thing, like, considering the PSVR 2 costs more than a PS5, and they're basically letting it die.
They did this with the first one. They just put it out there, and they didn't really support it. And they've done the same with the second one. So,
like, I think there's an Alien game in VR coming sometime.
Yeah, it's a Batman game. There's like a follow up to Arkham Arkham Knight VR, and I want to play that game, but not as a VR game.
But also, isn't it like 10 minutes long?
Yeah. Yeah, but anything Batman, you know, I'm up for it.
Well, I know, but wouldn't you be annoyed if you paid 60 quid for it and it's done in 10 minutes? You know,
I just play it a lot.
Over and over and over.
So the next section is, what have we been watching?
I'll go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. So I finished off Squid Game Season 2 on Netflix.
Right, nice.
Which I watched with my daughter, and I enjoyed it. It only seemed like half a story, though, and I think they actually admitted they filmed series 2 and 3 kind of back to back. And season 2 ends on a cliffhanger, and then season 3 is coming out later this year, so, and that's going to be the last season. They're only doing 3 seasons of it.
Okay.
But it took 3 years to get season 2, so I did enjoy the first Squid Game. This it's been good, don't get me wrong. I watch it in the Korean language with the English subtitles, because the English dub is absolutely terrible. It's awful. If you want to watch a good game, don't watch it with the English dub. Make sure you watch it in the Korean with the subtitles, because it's much better. So I've been watching that, finished that. Started watching The Night Agent Season 2. Only watched a couple of episodes of that. And I've been watching a really good show on Apple TV called Severance.
Right.
Which it's on its second season now. It just started a couple of weeks ago. The premise is, you go into work and your work memories, what you do at work, stay in the building. You have a work persona in the building. Right. When you leave the building, you have an implant in your brain, which then switches you back to your personal memories, which you can't access from inside work and vice versa. So you basically got two different personalities or two different personas, and your outside persona is called an outie, and your inside persona is called an innie. Right. And it's about what happens. They work for this company called Lumen, and it's like they're trying to figure out what their actual job is. They don't know what their actual job is. They're kind of staring at a screen, and they've got to put these like these little things into boxes on the screen. It's a bit, it's really good. It's a bit of a slow burn the first season, but after a couple of episodes, it's I recommend it. It's very good
stuff.
And I'm quite into another thing that I like to do is like old cars or cars in general, as in resurrection of old cars. I quite like watching a lot. I watch a lot of YouTube videos about that. There's one that I watch in particular called Tasty Classics. So this guy doesn't live that far from here, and he lives near Chester. His favorite thing is to find a car that's been sat for donkey's years, like sometimes 40 years, and try and get it running, and try and get it, you know, into a usable state, resurrect it basically. I really like watching those kinds of videos. It's when I'm got a bit of a loose end, I always go to YouTube and find some car resurrection videos.
Nice.
So I've been watching a lot of those. So yeah, that's what I've been watching.
So this week I've gone back to some documentaries about Super Smash Bros. Melee, or the community of competitive players around that. And so the original series that's on YouTube is called The Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
And there's 9 episodes. I think they're about 25 minutes each. You can watch them all together if you really want to. And if you watch it all together, it's like 4.5 hours. But
so this is people who competitively play Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah, Melee. But in particular, yeah,
the Melee version.
Yeah, right. The GameCube version is like 20 years old.
The GameCube version, right? Okay.
Yeah. And sort of all the sort of trial and tribulations have like having to try and get CRTs together. We're on Evo at one point, which is like, of course, the biggest fighting game sort of tournament that happens sort of every year.
Is there like a prize for this?
So at one point they were part of Major League Gaming, and of course we're in MLG, but not that MLG.
Not that one.
It's a different one. Yeah, yes. they're in MLG at one point, and there was like tournaments that you win like 10 grand for winning a tournament.
Right.
So you can do it as a, like, people get sponsorships by teams and things like that, and you basically become a professional gamer to do that kind of thing. And the documentary is made by East Point Pictures, and then he went on to do a sequel series called Metagame.
Metagame.
Yeah.
Right.
And that is only on Vimeo behind...
That's the paid-for streaming service.
It's behind a paywall. So I think you have to either rent it, or it's like, I think it's 25 quid to buy the whole series. I think there's like 7 or 8 episodes for Metagame.
So what is the Metagame a separate game to the Super Smash Bros. Melee?
So Metagame is the name of the documentary, the second one.
Right.
But it's still about the same group of people.
Yeah.
Playing the same version of Smash.
Right.
And Metagame more sort of concentrates on the five gods, as they call them, who are like the top five players in the world for like a very, very, very long time.
Yeah.
And sort of following their sort of journey. And then there's one guy comes along called Leffen, who starts to beat the gods one by one. So he gets the nickname the Godslayer.
Yeah.
He's a Swedish fella. And yeah, it's just going about that. And I think even Metagame like only goes as far as about 2015 or 2016.
Yeah,
it's not super recent, to be honest. I think out of the five gods, I think probably only Hungrybox is still active by now. And I think the rest of them have pretty much retired from competitive play.
Yeah.
In fact, I think there's one guy from the first documentary who has to retire from competitive play because he injures his hand somehow.
Yeah.
And then can't do it anymore. But a lot of them just are Twitch streamers now and don't really play competitively anymore, because there's a whole thing that esports are a young person's game, that you really need to be really young to have the reflexes.
Yeah.
And you and I would be well past it.
No doubt.
I enjoy, like, I used to enjoy watching Smash Bros. Melee when it was at Evo, but unfortunately Sony bought Evo. And as soon as that happened, Nintendo pulled Smash Brothers out the lineup, wouldn't allow it to be used because they didn't want anything to be, you know, anything to do with Sony.
Yeah.
So it's unfortunate there's no Smash Brothers in Evo anymore these days. I mean, there are still like tournaments and things going on, but Nintendo really don't help and aren't supportive of like a competitive Smash scene.
No.
To the extent where when the pandemic was on, Smash Melee is so old because it's a GameCube game from like what, 2001.
Yeah.
Obviously there's no online in it.
At all. No.
No. And when the pandemic was on and it was lockdown and you obviously couldn't meet up for like in-person tournaments, people were trying to mod Melee to add online play in.
Mm-hmm.
But they could still have tournaments, and Nintendo was sending cease and desists.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
You can't mod our game, blah blah. It's not allowed.
Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, they're not supportive in the sense. No.
Yeah, when it comes to online stuff, they are really anal about it.
Mm.
Very backwards or very reserved about it. Hopefully, that'll change with Switch 2, but I don't expect it to.
So. Smash Bros. Melee has got a surprising amount of depth to it, and I think the skill ceiling is extremely high. And I think they even released Smash Bros. Brawl on the Wii,
yeah,
as an answer to that, and tried to basically strip out as much of the depth from that version of the game. So when Brawl came out, they tried to make a competitive scene for Brawl in the same way they have one for Melee, and it just sort of died off.
Didn't happen
pretty quickly because it really favors defensive play, and the sort of things that people do in Melee you can't really do in Brawl, so people got really bored and it just sort of died off.
Yeah, fair enough. Right, I think it's time for our outro, isn't it?
Before we go to outros, we've just got a little shout out to do this week.
Okay.
And that's for Brad Galloway, who does the So Video Games podcast. I've been sort of friends with Brad for quite a while now, and he is managing editor of Game Critics. We'll possibly get him on at some point if we're lucky. And he's done So Video Games. They've just hit their 425th episode.
Wow.
And he's had a couple of co-hosts over the years that have both sort of been and gone these days. So these days he's doing like an hour or 90-minute podcast by himself every single week.
That is some commitment, isn't it? Especially doing it on your own is really hard.
Yeah.
I mean, we've only been doing it for a short time, but
yeah, but I
can imagine doing something like this on my own. I just won't know where to start.
I think we both listened to him, and he's a bit of an inspiration for both of us. So we just wanted to give him a little bit of a shout out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I only just recently started listening to his podcast, but I only started listening to video game podcasts in like 2008. Because that's when I first got an iPod, I think. The first podcast I listened to was Major Nelson's podcast from Xbox.
Right.
That was the very first podcast to listen to. And then I think it was Giant Bomb Cast, but they went ridiculous with their podcast. They're sometimes like a four-hour podcast.
Four or five hours, isn't it? It's too long.
You know, and then I still listen to now the Player One podcast. That's a really good podcast.
Right.
And obviously listen to Midlife Gamer when they had a podcast.
They haven't really done any episodes for years now.
Yeah, I know. But when they were in their prime doing those episodes, it was great. You know, Darren and Matt were great hosts on that podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And then I listened to what they call the CAGcast as well, which is Cheap Ass Gamer. That's an actual website. So they're the main podcasts that I listen to. But yeah, shout out to Brad for sure. He's definitely an inspiration to us.
Yeah. So his podcast is So Video Games! ! And I think that's about it, isn't it?
Yeah. So we probably want to mention our social media feeds. We are on TikTok now. It's just at Two Guys, Three Consoles on TikTok.
Yeah.
And that is a thing that's been managed not by us.
No.
And we have an Instagram as well. Same again. At Two Guys, Three Consoles, and a Blue Sky, same again, Two Guys, Three Consoles.
Yeah.
And there are our main media channels for the podcast.
Yeah, we've got the email, which is Two Guys, Three Consoles, but written. Two Guys, not numbers.
I will put it in the show notes as well.
Two Guys, Three Consoles at yahoo.com is the email address.
Yeah. And then my personal Instagram is at Matt Leach. Or Matt Leach 1 on Blue Sky.
Mm-hmm. Mine is J_monster.
Because the main one you use is Instagram, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, there's no underscore on Blue Sky. On Blue Sky, it's just literally J Monster, no space.
Yeah.
But on Instagram, it's J_monster.
Yeah. And just one final thing before we say goodbye is the Midlife Gamer Face Group kindly let us post a link on there for this podcast. So if you haven't seen that, check that out. And you can get the podcast feeds for Apple Podcasts and Spotify on there if you want to download and listen to us.
Yeah, so shout out to anyone from Midlife Gamer that's listening.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's it for episode 3. We'll see you on the next one.
Yeah. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Cheers.
Bye.